Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
Hey, welcome back to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Lyle.
I'm Wayne.
Got in there that time.
Yes, it did.
Cool. I was waiting. I was wondering, are you going to go second or third? All right, second.
So we just watched the Game of Thrones, the first episode of the HBO series.
Yes.
Awesome.
And there goes, I guess, my, what did you guys think?
Well, personally, I thought it was awesome.
All right. Don't ask him how it was, because he's going to say it again.
I might not even need the prompting.
Well, no, we know what New Jersey Chris thinks. Or Chicago Chris.
It was freaking cool. I really thought it was really good. I enjoyed it. The cinematography was great. The acting, the costumes. The
whole thing.
The story was a bit but...
the whole shebang.
No, I mean, really, there's some really minor things that I might nitpick, but yeah, it's just really good. And of course, it was only the first episode, but man, yeah. I'm hooked already. What'd you guys think?
I agree. I thought it was great,
I'd seen the preview.
I hadn't seen that.
And just for people who may not have heard of it, Game of Thrones, it's a low fantasy series on HBO, which comes from a series of books by George R.R. Martin. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like War of the Roses. I think that's where he got... That was part of the inspiration for the series. It's like the War of the Roses, the Civil War. Mm-hmm. Sorry if there's any spoilers there.
But you should have read the book by now.
You should have read the book, because that is... I think the book series is better than Lord of the Rings, and I think the TV series will be better than the Lord of the Rings movies.
Hmm. And Lyle is always right.
That's a pretty bold claim.
I think.
I
had seen the preview before, and when they go through the wall, which is the very first minute of the episode one, going through the wall, and when they come out of the wall, I was sold. I knew this was going to be, I knew it was going to be a great episode, and I think it's going to be a great series.
Yeah, it's just really impressive. It's really
and the little touches when they come out of the wall, and there's that like that iron basket. They're using these torches to go through a dark tunnel, and they toss these torches into this iron basket, and you barely notice it, but
I didn't notice it.
A lot of movies or a lot of TV shows, they would have torches, and then the next scene they don't have torches. And most people, and I wouldn't have thought to ask, oh, where did the torches go? Because you would have just imagined, oh, they just tossed them on the snow or whatever. But then you think, oh, yeah, they put them in the basket, so when they come back, they have torches to go back through the tunnel.
Oh, really? See, I was thinking that they put them there so that they couldn't be seen, because they were tracking these bad guys and torches.
Oh, but I mean, they're tracking them in broad daylight.
It was broad daylight, so they didn't need the torches.
That's how they found the wildlings, though. He found them by the smoke trail. The camp of the slaughtered guys?
Right.
Yeah. Same thing for us. Well, anyway, it's not that important.
But then again, you didn't need the basket. You could have just tossed the torches in the snow. Mm-hmm. But now you have the torches when you come back.
So they got to go back through the wall, which is pitch
black. I guess the point I'm making is that when you're creating an environment, a fantasy environment or something, and you put little touches like that, you make it actually a working environment. Because people can then understand, it's like... We can debate why they have that iron basket, but they were thinking...
The little touches in the D&D campaign. Do you remember the hole with the little wooden sticks?
Yes.
Yes. That I tried to make a living touch there. It didn't work. But.
Well, that's because we thought it was a part of a big mystery.
Yeah.
Little touches. We probably, knowing Wayne and I, we probably would have stood around that iron basket for a good 30 minutes trying to fathom, why is there an iron basket here? And then somebody would have tossed the torch in there, and we're like,
even if there was a torch, like, why is there a torch in the iron basket? I don't know.
Just for the listeners, so the listeners aren't left in the dark for that, there was a rope ladder that had long since decayed, the rope anyway, so the rungs were left behind, hence the sticks in a hole. Mm-hmm.
But in summation, Wayne and I suffer from analysis paralysis.
Yeah.
How do we enter this cave? Let's debate this for 2 hours.
I thought the casting for most of the characters was pretty spot on. Mm-hmm. I think some of the choices that we can quibble about now, such as Jaime
Lannister,
maybe going with like a classically, ruggedly handsome actor as opposed to a pretty boy actor. Mm-hmm. Will probably pay off later when we see how capable he is.
I thought they at least could have given him a wig of curly blonde hair.
No, because if we watched a movie like The Watchmen...
I didn't know... Yeah,
I thought the wig that they made Ozymandias wear, because the actor that... what's his name? Matthew Gooding or something? But he's naturally brown. Mm-hmm. And I thought the blonde wig that they made him wear, or the blonde dye, or whatever it was distractingly bad.
I remember,
I thought his accent was distractingly bad because it slipped into British every now and then, and there was no reason to not make him a British guy.
Yeah.
You could have said, okay, you're not American, you're British, and just use whatever accent is natural.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I will say, though, if you're casting three actors to be siblings,
mm-hmm.
make sure they all have the same accent.
Mm.
I think with the Lannisters, we've got an American using a British accent. We've got a British person using her natural accent. And we've got I think he's Danish,
uh-huh.
is the Jamie Lannister actor.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems to be trying to do an American accent it sounds to me.
I think you said it really well before. You know, it doesn't actually matter if it's the right accent. Just get whatever accent all three of them can do.
Exactly,
do
yeah. Because you could just say House Lannister, that's their accent.
Yeah.
It's not the same as House Stark or...
Why do they all sound like they're from Jersey? I don't know. That's Lannister.
Yeah, House Lannister. Oh, House Lannister.
The Lannisters. Forget about it.
Or like Luigi. What do you mean? The things I do for love.
All the dwarfs are bastards in their father's eyes. Oh, man.
Wow.
Yeah, that was fun.
Please close the door.
All right. The butchered point is made.
Right.
Yeah, but anyway, if you have a chance, watch it right away. If you don't have a chance, wait till it's on DVD and buy it.
No. That's one thing we were talking about before we started the podcast is... like Wayne and I have read all the books up to now,
yeah,
and it's not like they've skipped any significant scenes in the first episode.
No,
it's just that you know all the rest of the book of Game
you know
of Thrones,
what's coming,
and then of course you know Clash of Kings and all the other books that follow.
Mm-hmm.
What happens, and you just want to see. Oh, there's the Hound. I want to see that particular scene of the Hound when he does this,
uh-huh.
which is in like the second or third book.
Yeah,
so it's almost.
I thought, yeah, as you said, like, oh, there's the Hound. Where's his brother? Oh, that's right. He's not coming until,
yeah,
like,
he's not
how many
come
episodes?
Oh, God, how many episodes do I have to wait to see his brother
mm-hmm.
and to watch that particular exchange?
Because I'm going to be off the hook.
I get on the weeds.
I wasn't trying to do an Italian accent.
Oh, is it? You weren't?
No.
That's not going to be off the hook.
I thought you were doing Luigi.
No. I was just trying to be real high and excited. Anyway.
It's almost like you just want to wait till the entire series is out on DVD and buy it. But then if you wait for season one, you'll be like, oh, when's season two going to come?
Yeah.
You know, so...
True.
I guess we just have to show restraint.
How far into the first book did they get with the first episode? I remember the scene where Bran fell, but I don't remember how.
It's tough to break it down into chapters
because he divides his books by the characters.
And that's right. You said the show's going chronologically instead, right?
Yeah. But that's not going to be significant
until the last book.
It won't be significant until season five.
Oh, wow.
Judging by Martin's. What Martin said is the plan for the series, where basically A Feast of Crows and the upcoming book, A Dance of Dragons, that's where the time... He basically split the characters into two.
So what is it, like A Dance of Dragons?
The groups of characters into two. So Feast of Crows only covers these characters.
And Dance of Dragons is the same time period from these characters' perspective.
I see.
So everything happens chronologically up until that point.
Okay.
But to answer your question, I forget exactly how far in the book the first episode got.
Okay.
Because once you read, maybe you can disagree, Lyle, but I think like once you read a series, it's kind of like, it's just like one continuous storyline to you, and it's almost a little bit tough to remember, this happened, they got this far at the end of the first book, this far at the end of the second book.
Because you kind of remember it as the good parts.
Yeah.
Or the significant parts. Mm-hmm. Because, oh, that happens, so, this is going to happen to that character.
Yeah, you just remember, like, the order
this
things
almost
happen,
seems like but... just like... the first couple chapters.
Yeah, I think that's all it is.
It was probably Bran's first chapter, a couple of Ned's chapters, and maybe, I don't know, probably about five chapters,
okay.
I'll say. And I actually, it would be something to look at, and you're kind of torn, you'd want it to be only 13 episodes, you know, just because it's quick. But then you're like, oh no, it's got to be 20 or 22, because that'll give you more of the book, but I don't know how many episodes this season will be, but it'll be completely worth it.
We said it before the podcast, but I'm kind of surprised they didn't have a little, subtitles of the character's name and kind of like what house they were a part
they
of.
They do that a lot on Japanese TV when you watch a movie.
And it kind of annoys me.
But it makes sense.
It makes sense.
Yeah. But at least the least
the
part.
People look the same in Hollywood movies. Yeah, to Japanese folks.
Yeah, that's probably why they do it. But it, when they introduced the Northern Kingdom, Winterfell, they titled it the first time they showed it, and I just think they could probably keep doing that.
Yeah, well, they're gonna have to.
Because then they'll have other kingdom or other cities or kingdoms that'll look very similar, and people won't be able to get the distinction.
Maybe
so.
Though. I mean, the scene that they showed.
Well, it's hard for me to tell because I know the. I've read the books, and some of the characters, they never even named them, but I could figure out by his attitude that that was Theon Greyjoy, but then Wayne hadn't picked it up.
I didn't realize that was Theon Greyjoy until you pointed it out, because...
I never got to where he was important enough to remember.
Well, yeah, and it had been a while since I read the books. I didn't even remember he was in those scenes until Lyle said, and that's Theon Greyjoy.
And he doesn't become a point-of-view character until later in the series, so then it's like, how many... Are you going to label everybody just... Exactly, that has a speaking part?
Mm. Yeah, so. I don't know. The view that they showed of the kingdoms, then they only showed the two, Winterfell and King's Landing. Yes. They were really...
Oh, but they showed Pentos across the Narrow Sea.
That's right, they did. Yeah. But I think they were really characteristic. Like, when they showed Winterfell, you could see the ancient tree, the red tree. What were they called?
The Heart Tree.
The Heart Tree, thank you. In the background. So that's really characteristic. I can see that they wouldn't keep labeling. They just
are we talking about, like, the map view or the actual, like, the clockwork map view from
no,
the
no,
opening?
No,
or the
actual... Which was also freaking cool. That opening was great. I love that. Anyway,
yeah, it was okay.
When they just showed, like, a picture of the castle and they said Winterfell. Same thing later when they showed...
If they were going to show it once, then I was just saying, you may as well just keep
title
showing
it each time, but...
Which could be a mistake.
I don't know. We'll see how it unfolds.
That, super minor. We are redefining nitpicking right now.
All right.
It was that good. I mean, you can judge for yourself that we're
yeah, exactly. We're
picking
we're,
apart how they label things.
Titling.
Yeah. So. I think the font for the characters.
No, I wasn't going to go that far. But you also, like...
But actually, speaking of that, the opening with those little gears building up the thing, that was so cool.
And as I was saying, like, when you're reading the book... You always flip to the map, because when they reference a certain part of the kingdom, you'll always flip to the map to figure out where it is. So that was probably a perfect opening. It's just show, here are the significant parts. And then they can keep adding to that when they introduce new parts.
I love the idea there. It's like all the little gears moving together to make up the things, like all the different people. Oh, it was so good.
I didn't really like it. Only because it, I don't know, kind of, to me at least, implied clockwork technology. And I don't know, that's not really... part of the world. It kind of, to me, someone watching it for the first time might think that this world has a higher technology level than it actually does. What with the clockwork gears and the things building up. I know it's the opening and we're picking nits, but it didn't really do anything for me. I would have been just fine with something else, a model.
I didn't get the clockwork thing as much as you guys did. When you mentioned it, I can say, I guess it was kind of geary.
Yeah, there were all the gears kind of like rationing stuff off.
Maybe it was just...
But I just kind of thought it was very organic. The city is growing before you.
Yeah, maybe it was just that I thought
it was blocky,
really cool,
but I thought it was amazing. That's definitely going to be on my regular view thing. And I've got season 5 of Friday Night Lights to watch now, too. I'm going to be one busy man. Perhaps divorced.
What about all those bead movie DVDs you got to watch, too?
Oh, should I get started on those? I've watched Warriors of the Wasteland.
Which sucked.
And I watched Werewolf Woman, which is pretty bad.
So, what are we talking about today?
Well, we're talking about Changeling again.
Oh.
And then we're going to seg into fairy tales. So, why are we talking about Changeling first, Lyle?
Lyle.
Yeah. Was I the only one that felt bad after that episode?
I didn't.
For those that didn't listen to our Changeling...
Campaign confession.
The previous episode. We were a little harsh on the setting, and I think we could have been more constructive.
I like how the I has become a we.
I was trying to get you guys.
I know.
I wasn't that kind at it either, but...
Well, you were pretty wishy-washy.
I still really... we covered it last episode. Never mind. Let's not go there.
Right. But have a listen. I admit I ranted a little bit, and I just thought we could be more constructive and talk a little bit more about how to make a fairy tale game using Changeling the Lost work for us. And not saying that it's... We're not implying that we're going to fix the system. You know, we're not that arrogant. But just how we make that work for us, and perhaps that could be it could work for you.
Yeah, and hopefully look into fairy tales as well, because like I said, I really enjoyed that idea.
I think we all do. So, Lyle, you said you had some ideas about Changeling, so...
Well, I shouldn't say they were my ideas, because I read Fables.
Okay.
So I borrowed Wayne's comic book series, Fables.
I only have the first one, but...
Right. And I just, when I read Fables, I just thought, that's it. That's how to play Changeling the Lost. Mm-hmm. And saying that, you basically get rid of the Changelings and the Lost. But Fables is basically, there's a fairy tale land, mm-hmm. and it's taken over by this entity called the Adversary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they make reference to him taking over Narnia.
It's not implicit, but it's implicit. They're not directly. They don't directly say it.
They don't say it, but they refer to the lion who's holier than thou.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also the Emerald Kingdom.
Yeah.
I think the Wizard of Oz land.
Cool.
Oz.
Yeah, they reference him taking over these places.
These different fantasy places.
Okay.
And basically all of these fairy tale characters are now living in New York?
Refugees. Yeah, I think it's New York.
New York?
They're essentially refugees in New York.
Yeah, and they have like a little kingdom or a little community there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in New York, because in upstate New York are all like the three little pigs and the characters that wouldn't be able to pass for human.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's
because like Vampire the Masquerade, they have one main law is that you don't reveal your true nature to the mundanes,
regular
people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the main characters are like King Cole is the mayor of Fairyland. I forget what it's called.
I think it's something town or whatever. But
and Snow White is his assistant who actually runs it, and the Big Bad Wolf is a detective.
Mm-hmm.
So the first story kind of plays out like a mystery,
mm-hmm.
with the Big Bad Wolf as the detective investigating a murder.
Okay.
Disappearance.
I thought it was a very noir story.
Yeah, it was basically just take that instead of playing these people that used to be human and have transformed and then deal with all this this damaged and I was abused in the fairyland. Just make them they're actually just straight up fairies,
mm-hmm.
and they're not in the fairyland because some sort of adversary. And it could be taking Wayne's idea of the kind of the Lovecraftian old ones. Maybe they took it over. So they're not actual fairies. So that would explain why you would have a seasonal court system, because that's what you had in Fairyland.
Yeah.
And you've just set it up in this mundane world. And using Changeling the Lost has a glamour mechanic,
mm-hmm.
which is basically like a blood pool and vampire.
Yeah.
And why don't you say that the glamour mechanic is kind of what a more traditional glamour, where it's basically hiding your true nature.
Mm-hmm.
So just as in Vampire, you need blood to spend a blood point to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say this new fairy game, you need to spend a point of glamour every time you wake up to maintain this protection, this glamour that hides your true nature from other people. So you could look like the Big Bad Wolf,
mm-hmm.
but people would just view you as a human.
Huh.
Because that one of your criticisms from last episode, Wayne, was there was no real reason to use the glamour, and you wanted it to run out, but
that is a good reason. If you have to use it to kind of fuel, I guess, to borrow the changeling term, which would be the mask that kind of hides your true identity from everyone else.
You know, it'd be really interesting too, is if the powers, instead of the powers themselves requiring the glamour, the powers require the glamour to hide their effect or to make it less.
Would be a way to. So the glamour cost isn't so much. So the glamour cost wouldn't so much be fueling the power, so much as sort of masking it from people.
But then what about people using their catch?
Because
I was saying, if you have a daily expenditure of the glamour, then
that encourages. Eventually, you're going to run out.
You're going to run out.
That's what I was. I think that goes into what we were saying last time about how the powers, the most interesting part of all the powers was the catch.
Right. So
there
you
go.
So it forced you to use the catch because you know that your glamour is going to run out because you're using one point every day.
I'd say divorce them from, like, use the glamour to cover the use of the power, but use the catch to be able to do the power, because you'd still need some kind of limit for players.
That seems really harsh to me. Mechanic-wise, in terms of you have to pay the glamour cost and you have to meet the catch. That because, as I said before, some of the catches are quite specific and difficult to set up.
And some of the ones I had would be, I would never be able to use the power.
Okay. Yeah, I see
if
that
Wayne
as...
Wayne is the storyteller.
Yeah, exactly. I realize I'm a very harsh storyteller.
Just say no.
Yeah, that's my thing.
And then we had a problem with the clarity system. Mm-hmm. And just a quick refresher for those that didn't listen to the last episode, is clarity is how connected you are to the reality. And uh-huh. It's kind of like a scale from one. Being you're not connected to, you can't separate reality from fiction.
Right.
To 10, you are very in tune to the mundane reality.
Yeah.
And that's fine, keep that. But let's say if you use up all your glamour and you get the zero, not only do you lose that that mask, mm-hmm. but then you also have to make a clarity roll because maybe, and if you fail, then you automatically lose a point of clarity. So there's actually like a really serious repercussion. Because if you just lose your mask, you might, and you're the big bad wolf, maybe you could just hide.
Yeah. Mm. Go about to the upstairs.
Which is interesting, but then there's also the downside. It's also a risk mm-hmm. instead of just like hiding in the woods if you don't want to use it.
That can also lead to some interesting NPCs as well, because you say the ones who lived in upstate New York are the ones who don't look human. Maybe these are just ones that choose not to.
Oh, that's another way to go to. Or something that happened from Vampire Dark Ages. The humanity thing was you had to make a roll if you were apart from humanity by yourself for a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. So that could also factor into the clarity. Okay, well, you just drop the mask.
Yeah.
You can't associate with human beings. That means you have to go spend time by yourself, which means you eventually start to go crazy because you have no one to talk to.
Go ahead.
Especially if you're thinking like these fairy tale creatures, maybe there is some kind of connection like they have in some of the fairy tales, like they're powered by people.
That would almost be the emotion thing.
So. Yeah, and I was thinking, and the emotion is because they don't actually, I mean, they're from a fairyland, so they have different emotions, or, I mean, similar, mm-hmm. but a little bit different, and maybe they're very capricious, and...
That's really interesting, that sounds really hard to play.
No, but then what they do is when they come to the mundane world, one of the reasons why they have to be these, like, psychic parasites mm-hmm. is that helps ground them in this reality, mm-hmm. is they're sucking these emotions from people, and just to, again, a review is... The way to build your glamour in Changeling is to
harvest emotions.
Harvest strong emotions, either positive or negative.
Yeah.
So they just don't. They have their concept of love, you know, happily ever after, or whatever. But it's not our concept of love, or our reality of love, which is, you know, if you want to be cynical, there is no happily ever after. You got to work at a marriage and things like that. So what they need to do is they need to suck up these emotions of disappointment. Mm-hmm. The love in this world, the hate, the type of hate that's in this world, mm-hmm. the fear that's in this world.
That's a good one.
So that explains why you have people that need to be psychic parasites. Because in Changeling the Lost, if you were actually human at one time, and then you get kidnapped to this fairy mm-hmm. world, and then you come back, you're still
human. You
yeah,
still
and if you were kidnapped at 18 or whatever, then you're like, well, I know what it is to be human. I'm not human anymore. But I still know what it's like to interact.
You don't need the glamour.
Actually, I really like that idea because that solidifies the having to make a clarity roll when you lose glamour even more because you don't have that connection to the current reality anymore. You don't have any glamour in your pool. You've kind of forgotten what it is to associate with this world. And so harvesting those real world emotions ties you back to this reality.
And another complaint that we had was there was just too many changeling. So let's just call it fairies. There's too many fairies in the world.
Yeah.
So what we could do is you could have, just like Fable did, is you just have the one town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is, if you want to have a support network and interact with all these different fairies, you can stay in the town. Once you go outside of New York or Tokyo or Toronto,
wherever it may be,
wherever it is, then you're kind of on your own. And you have more freedom because you don't have all these different fairies and these court systems watching over you. But then, of course, you're separated. Yeah. So then maybe a lot of these people do go mad when they're separated. One thing I was playing with, and I don't know how feasible this is, the town actually shifts from real city to real city.
Well, that's such a cool idea.
And it kind of blinks, or they don't even... Maybe if you try to explain it too much, then, you know, of course... The reality of explaining it is going to
The reality is players want in-depth explanations and generally don't go on the "it just works" assumption.
No, but you just like, it happens to blink. So from Tokyo to New York to London to France. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like in its own little reality. And you can keep the hedge from Changeling the Lost. And And that would explain why you guys are, why the characters are more comfortable with going into the hedge, because that was always there for them.
Yeah.
They were always familiar with this borderland between their world and the mundane world. Mm-hmm. And we should say that in Fable, they feel safe in the mundane world because for whatever reason, the adversary doesn't want to invade the mundane world.
Mm.
So apparently... Yeah.
Doesn't want to or can't or...
Apparently he can go into it. Or they make reference that there could be agents from the adversary in the mundane world, but he just has shown no inclination to take over that reality. So the mundane world is just another realm, and just no more or less, or actually they imply it is less significant than the fairy world or Oz.
Huh. I like the blinking,
or Narnia.
I like the blinking city idea, but as a GM, I would not want to run that.
Yeah, it was hard. I mean, before we played Changeling, I recommended this song to Wayne to listen to and to watch the video. And what was called? It's called Weightless by Nada Surf.
Okay.
So it's on YouTube if people want to watch that.
Mm.
But basically, the person's goes into like jumps off a cliff, goes in the water, and then comes out of a washing machine in a laundromat.
Yeah, yeah.
And goes through maybe a door or something, and then comes out of the fridge of somebody's apartment. I forget what the actual pearls, but it just he's bouncing from place to place to place.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed very capricious, which I think the fairy thing has to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I could see what Wayne's saying is the more rules you put, the more...
No, I didn't mean from a...
Or
from
the
a,
players want a lot of rules. But then if you're like, you're fairies, it doesn't make sense.
I just meant like it's a great idea to have the city or the location blink around, right?
I don't know how that would work. But I just kind of...
Well, it doesn't have to work. I mean, you could just say, this is what happens.
You're saying it's hard to come up with a new city every
week. I'm just saying, yeah, as a GM, I would not want to come up with a new city and a new location every time it blinks.
But you don't have to. I mean, because you can control when...
I realize you can control when that happens, but if you kind of set that up, and if you present that to the players, either out of game or in character, they're going to expect to see it happen. I would. If I was a player in that game, and, you know, the people are telling me, or I just know, since I'm a character in this world, that this location blinks, then if it didn't, I would feel a little bit, not cheated, but I would be kind of always expecting it to happen.
Right? In D&D, when's that there's gonna happen? The elemental planes, the astral plane, the all those stuff. Do you expect to see those when you play a D&D campaign?
No, but the fact is, if we got to a high enough level where I could cast that spell, I know that you as the GM would
that's
let that
that's
happen.
When the player has control of it.
I suppose.
Yeah.
It is a different thing.
I think it sounds to me like it's just opening doors, not closing them.
I agree, it is opening doors, but I thought the door was sort of open enough by having, you know, the storybook characters be able to go wherever they wanted in the mundane world.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because, I mean...
It was just throwing it out there.
Yeah, and I like
it. I didn't get that from Fable. So all the stuff I got from Fable sounds like it's pretty solid.
No, I agree.
And that one idea I had is
pretty shaky. I'm just saying, like, if you continue the theme of... Well, I guess if you continue the theme of Changeling, which is supposed to be a little bit of paranoia, right?
Yeah.
I like that. And when you brought it up in the Changeling episode, I'm like, you're right, Lyle. I kind of shot myself in the foot with the paranoia thing by having all these support networks that... So the players never felt like they weren't in danger.
Mm-hmm.
Having the one nucleus of this sort of, you know, storybook escapees, and then having no support network outside that, yeah, you can go outside that support network, but no one's going to help you, which I like.
A good way to show paranoia is to have everyone else that you meet be paranoid. And if there's only the one enclave, there's no backup, man, that's pretty scary.
Yeah, and I like that.
I'm wondering, though, what about characters? When you created a character in this game, would you say, all right, I'll be Little Red Riding Hood, or can you create something yourself? And how do you do
Because I sort of thought of the same thing after reading Fables, Lyle, and my point was the main characters in the story are the characters from the fairy tales, which is fine, but as a storyteller, as a GM, I would not want the players to say, I'm going to be Little Red Riding Hood.
Players might rebel against that. Well, I want to make my own guy.
But
I was thinking that... You just use what they have in the Changeling the Lost book.
Mm-hmm.
And if you play one of the ogres, then naturally you could be the giant from Jack and the Beanstalk. You could be the troll under the bridge for Three Billy Goats Gruff.
Yep.
The players would then say, like, because those are the stories that have filtered into the, let's say, the mundane world.
Yeah.
So the Prince Charming, actually, if you look at Changeling the Lost, none of them are actually human.
Right.
Handsome humans.
Mm-hmm.
But you could choose one of the fairest.
Yeah.
Who are supposed to be, they are very attractive in in the fairy tale land,
uh-huh.
and one of them is one of the males there is Prince Charming.
Mm, okay.
So that person's stories have just filtered into the mundane world, and of course we're going to give them a human face.
Huh.
The big bad wolf could just be one of the beastlings. Beastlings?
Oh, they're just beasts.
The beasts, one of the beasts.
Okay.
And it could be any beast, really. And it's like, yeah. Well, I'm the big bad wolf. That's one of the stories. I'm one of the three little pigs. Huh. That's what I was kind of thinking, because I wouldn't want to spend too much time then reworking the character system.
Yeah,
just
that system-wise, I totally hear what you're saying. I think that's really good. But what is... I don't know.
I think... Sorry, not to cut you off, but I think it's the same thing as... Because you're taking established stories, right? These fairy tales that are kind of established. Maybe not as established as, like, another series, say, like the Song of Ice and Fire.
Yes.
Right?
Okay.
As an example, and to not use Star Wars. But, like, if you...
Thank you.
Right? If you played in the Song of Ice and Fire role-playing game, would you want to be Brendan Stark or Jon Snow or those people? The answer is kind of no, right, for most people. And from the GM's perspective, that story has already been told, right? You don't want to tell that story again.
Well, you don't have to retell someone's story. They're just the same character from the story.
Yeah,
but I
don't quite see the analogy.
My analogy is,
because
to a lesser extent...
Okay, for example, who would you want to play?
Let's say I wanted to play the big bad wolf. I don't know who I want to play. I haven't really thought about it.
And that's the thing, like, is can I play Bob, this guy I created?
Yeah, just play Bob. He's not a famous person from a fairy tale.
Okay.
my point was...
I think you could have it where you could have both. Players could say, I'm this, I'm kind of like the Prince Charming.
I would prefer I'm kind of like the... Whatever, rather than I am...
I think we're splitting hairs here.
I think
that's my specialty.
It is.
That kind of takes away from the kind of the premise that you're going for, though. Like, if you're playing the Big Bad Wolf, I mean, he's got these stories of, you know, being the Big Bad Wolf behind him. If you play just this guy who doesn't have his own story, do you then create, like, your own fairy tale for it?
That'd be good.
See, I think
that could be a backstory.
I think that'd be very interesting as well, and that'd be a really fun way to do it. It'd be hard. I don't think that many people would be into it, per se, but for me...
But I guess if you say, we're going to play a fairy tale game, and they're not into, like, fairy tales, then they probably shouldn't play it.
Right. I'll jump in here and say...
Sorry, fairies, like, not fairy tales, my bad.
I haven't played Skyon, but I've gotten the books, and it is, you're playing demigods.
Can I say why I disagree with your point, Wayne? Your analogy?
I didn't actually make my point, but okay.
No, your analogy with Game of Thrones is that, or your Song of Fire and Ice is that you're not... retelling these fairy tales. You're drawing the characters. So I think if you were saying, let's play a Game of Thrones and who wants to be the Hound, we're not actually going to do that story. We're going to tell another story that the Hound did. I think players would be like, yeah, I'd want to play the Hound. He's pretty badass. I want to play Jaime Lannister. Or they said, we're going to do the wars that happened prior to the books.
Yeah.
And then people might be interested in playing the different characters. But if you were saying, yeah, we're going to play the story of the books and see if you can survive this time, then yeah, people are going to rebel. But this is actually happening after the fairy tales.
There is a big difference, too, because the Hound, for example, or all the characters in Game of Thrones, they were all very well-written, and they're all very fleshed out. This is how, like, Ned Stark, he's a conservative, straight-talking kind of guy, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, the Prince Charming, what's he like?
You have a lot more freedom.
Exactly.
I suppose.
So again,
I'm wrong. Yeah. But I was going to say, I think... Going back, certain characters...
What can I say? That's what I'm good at, proving you wrong.
Yeah. 1 point for life. So I was going to say, certain characters I would think would have to be played a certain way.
Uh-huh.
Right? For example, like the Big Bad Wolf.
But the Big Bad Wolf in Fables was not the Big Bad Wolf. Was not played as you would think in the fairy tale.
And that's the thing, like, you could go so many directions. Like, you could say... You could have him be a good guy. Yeah, I'm. Everybody calls me the Big Bad Wolf. I'm not actually that bad. I'm not that big either, maybe.
I'm misunderstood.
Exactly.
You should call me the Big Misunderstood Wolf.
Yeah, Little Red Riding Hood, she's a bitch, but she made all these stories about me.
All right, so I'll just shut up nonstop digging my hole. But so I'll go to a different point. The point I was going to make about Skyon is in that system, you're playing...
Godlings,
right?
Yeah.
Cool.
And supposedly... This relates to what you said, Chris. Through that story, through that game, eventually, I don't know how you're supposed to do it, because I haven't read the entire thing. You're supposed to kind of craft your own legends and myths.
Yeah.
That, like, you're not Hercules. You could be the son of Zeus, but it is you're supposed to sort of create your own myth and your own legend about the game campaign because you eventually become a god.
That's really good. And, you know, I was thinking it might be hard to come up with your own fairy tale for that. But there's actually that that fairy tale categorization system we saw. What was it called again? The Allen...
Something.
Allen. The Aaron Thompson?
Yeah, Aaron Thompson, yeah. Because it breaks... It has a really, like, divided breakdown of different kinds of stories like that. It'd be really good fodder.
It seems to be divided with no real order, though.
Yeah, there isn't. There does seem to be.
It could help somebody who is stumped, because you could say animals, religious, realistic, ogres,
supernatural,
jokes,
formulaic.
Formula is another one.
Yeah.
Fairies and supernatural beings, and just give them those titles, whether or not you agree with it. And if somebody goes, "Isn't an ogre a supernatural being?" You're like, "Whatever, just run with it."
You know, that'd be really cool too to have.
Obviously, you haven't had yourself as players, because the number of times I've tried to say, "Dude, just go with it, just go with it," you have picked that shit apart.
2 hours entrance to a cave, that's all I gotta say.
All right.
No, but, you know, we just tried out Fate a little while ago, and one of the best parts of that system was the aspects of it, right?
That's rather contentious, but anyway.
You could say it's the only part of the system. Yeah.
But that, I thought, was really interesting. We came up with catchphrases for all of our characters. Imagine something similar like this, where you come up with the moral of the story for your character. Maybe that's what you build your story
on. It could be like your flaw.
Yeah.
Like, Ubiquity has that.
Mm-hmm. Where GURPS has that. Oh, there's disadvantages.
Yeah. Well, they have disadvantages. But I guess the way we play Ubiquity is we make sure that everybody's got a flaw and really put it...
A fun flaw
that's part of their personality.
Yeah, it sounds like it'd be a lot of fun to play.
So, we were going to talk about some actual fairy tales.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Beauty and the Beast. Oh. You know, I thought of that when playing... When we talked about doing an episode on fairy tales. Mm. And just because of the different elements, I mean, it's got magic items. It's got a very clear and easy to understand moral of
beauty's
on
the
true
inside.
Love.
Beauty's in the inside.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Very clear moral that I just.
Apparently, it's so clear we couldn't see it.
Something about roses.
Really apparent, and it's
And it's got somebody dying on his deathbed because of a broken heart. And a very classic, it has a lot of the classic tropes of fairy tales, such as the deal that's made in the beginning to get the purse. So you have the merchant father who steals
his daughter,
steals a rose, and somehow the exchange is like, oh, that's very precious for me. I'll take your youngest daughter, please.
It was, he was going to kill the father for it, and he didn't, the father pleaded for his life with his daughter.
Yeah.
Jerk.
Yeah, I saw that kind of, like, don't kill me. I'll give you my daughter.
So, in playing that one, who would you take from that? The daughter? The beast? The father?
Well, it's not
where you're
going to
do that.
I
wouldn't do it that way, because...
Oh, see, that's...
Sorry, I've been outvoted, but I thought that would be boring.
Well, that's what I was saying before about the characters. That's the part, like, do you play the big bad wolf? Do you play the beast?
I don't recall a vote. What are you...
I meant the part about... I was outvoted about... pulling real characters from the stories into the setting.
Oh, that's what I was asking.
Are you talking about fables? I'm not necessarily... Yeah. No. I just think in general, I wasn't thinking about...
characters
for fables.
Not compared to games.
Or characters for fairy tales. I was actually thinking elements, such as Lyle mentioned, the deal.
Yeah.
I see the deal as being...
Elements would I pull out?
Yeah,
the deal.
I was looking at the wrong place. Cool.
So in other words, the deal is quite common. Another example, not to jump, would be...
The
Rumpelstiltskin as another example of the deal. Sorry.
And also from Beauty and the Beast, I would take.
Also from Beauty and the Beast, we'd go with.
The cursed. The beast is cursed. He's under a curse that makes him until he finds true love. So.
And there is a catch to get out of it.
Yeah, there is a catch, and I think they've used that. Like for example, D&D's Ravenloft, Lord Strahd's he's under a curse.
Mm-hmm. That'd be really hard playing that.
Be a nice complex villain.
Hmm.
I would think for any whether it was fantasy or modern. Or even like a future setting is you just have some sort of person that's under a curse, but maybe they need.
So would you use like the curse in the traditional magic sense, even in like a modern or a fantastic setting, or would you say a curse could be something like
a legal contract?
I was going to say a legal contract, or I was going to say the villain's dying of cancer and he's doing this to, you know, could you make it a real world disease or a real world problem?
Would you want to? I think that's maybe probably too mundane.
Could you explain a little more? Because like cancer was around in the past.
I realize that, but instead of like an actual magic curse,
he's cursed by cancer.
No, the villain, say for example, Mr.
Beast.
No, Mr. Freeze from Batman, right?
Okay.
He was actually
Mr. Beast.
Mr. Beast.
I thought he was trying to. I thought he was trying to make up a name.
No. So Mr. Freeze from Batman, right?
Right.
He was trying to find a cure for his wife.
Yes.
Right. Who was frozen and.
Yeah.
he eventually ends up being, you know, a villain, sort of because of revenge, but his ultimate goal is always to find a cure for his wife. And yes. He's doing things that would be classified as bad to, I guess, kind of go to a good end, at least for him. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the thing I meant. So, for example, if the villain's daughter was dying of cancer, and, for example, this scientist found a cure, and the villain could either steal the cure or work to try and get it, but do a lot of evil things to get it, that could be seen as similar, in my mind, at least, to the curse, where it's not an actual magic curse.
As Kristen,
it's rather mundane.
I guess, yeah.
But...
Actually, but you can tie it even closer to Beauty and the Beast, and, like, yeah, his daughter's dying of, let's say, cancer. Yeah, I can see why Chris is skeptical, because it's, like, what are the players going to play, cancer researchers? I mean, they are more heroic than Superman, but not very fun, for people to play. But his daughter's dying of a disease that can be cured by something that's at the end,
right.
Like some MacGuffin at the end of the adventure. Mm-hmm. So he basically takes an NPC from the players, like their daughter, their sidekick, mm-hmm. and says, "You'll get her back when I get my daughter back."
Hmm.
Something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's where I would see how to do the cancer thing.
It wouldn't necessarily have to be cancer, or you wouldn't even have to put the.
There's a rare herb. She's dying of this, and there's a rare herb somewhere else. Go.
Yeah, you wouldn't even have to put the PCs at direct opposition to the villain. They could just sort of cross paths. You know, I mean, I guess a classic superhero thing is, as I said, Mr. Freeze. You know,
they're in his palace, and they think he's the bad guy, and then they find out his motives.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that just makes him a good villain, you know, to have strong
motives. I mean, we're getting into morality here. Does that make him a good villain if he's still doing lots of horrendous stuff to
good as in memorable as in good.
All right,
story,
good as in memorable. All right.
I don't know. Personally, I like the fantastic twist more for it. I would, if it were up to me as GM, I'd go with the magical curse.
I suppose,
but,
so.
And that's
but
more
you would
flavorful.
You would have to set that up from the beginning. You would.
Well,
I mean,
we're playing a fairy tale story, so.
I wasn't necessarily assuming that. I was just looking for things that people could pull out to use in any kind of story. If you were playing like a modern story. And then all of a sudden, ooh, this guy's a magic curse. It would be kind of it would feel very disjointed to me as a player.
I see.
If you said it was a fairy tale story, okay, yeah, then the guy's magically cursed. It makes sense.
If I were going for the fairy tale story, I'd probably, the thing I would play with the most is the beast. Like, I would probably take the idea of beast and just make him a really villainous, really nasty kind of thing. He's done some horrible kind of things. Maybe not actually make him monstrous in physically, maybe more in the way he behaves.
But then how would you work that into the story then? Because if you do that...
It sounds like you're redefining what a beast is, which is fine.
No,
but
it's fine, but how would you put that into the story? I mean, if you do that, you're essentially forcing one of the PCs to fall in love with this character.
Oh, exactly. And that maybe he has a tragic background behind him.
Yeah, but I don't think you could force a player to do that.
Well, that was something I was going to bring up just a moment ago, is that a very, very common element from fairy tales is true love. How the heck do you put that in a game?
We kind of talked about this in Seduction episode, but I think that's something that has to develop kind of as the game progresses, and then you as the game master can say, okay, this is now an element I can play with.
Yeah, and I don't think it's something you could do from the start, period.
Which is why I...
Love at first sight?
True love. You could do that on the NPC side. I could almost see it the reverse, right?
NPC falls in love with the PC.
Yes, one of the PCs...
But even if that, like, true love is not one-sided.
No,
it's mutual.
It isn't.
Yeah.
So the piece...
The other one would be unrequited love.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't have an answer, but it's just, to me, that's something... I don't know how I would do that.
Well, not to repeat what we did in Art of Seduction, but I would say once you get to Happily Ever After, maybe end it.
Well, I agree, but how do you get there? How do you plan to get there?
I don't think you can.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So I'm wondering...
I think you can.
I don't think you can plan it from the beginning. I don't think you can sit down as a GM and say, this story is going to have these elements in there. Because if none of the players buy in, it just falls flat.
Yeah, you could
you could say that for anything. If
none
of the players buy into that it's a horror game, then you can't do the horror game. Because everybody's going to be cracking jokes in that.
Right. Yeah. So you would I agree, you would have to set up from the beginning.
But true love, just because true love doesn't mean that they both fall in love at the same time. Like, I mean, love at first sight can actually
only be one person.
One person, and then the other person then falls in love later on.
In the real world, yeah, but how about fairy tales?
But the beauty doesn't fall in love with the beast straight away.
That's true, too, yeah.
So, I mean, the ending is true love because she falls in love with who he is, not what he looks like.
And that's the thing, like, do you think you could plan that from the beginning of the adventure to say, like, this PC, maybe she's playing the beauty. Do you think you could plan that she falls in love with this NPC, the beast, by the end?
As a storyteller, yes, because you would control it.
No, NPC. I think he was saying the beauty.
You can control the
beauty
NPC,
was a PC.
You control the PC.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was being confused by the beauty NPC.
Sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I would say no.
The opposite. I could see very well this. You.
But then it could be a tragedy. I mean, you're planning a true love story, but I mean, I think in any game, if you plan out this is how it's going to end,
you're
going to
be disappointed.
That's a bad choice.
two of the five players are going to die.
Yeah.
To have a fun game for both the players and the storyteller is everybody should be surprised by the ending because nobody knows how it's going to end. So maybe you have the potential for true love and you have all these steps, as we talked about in Art of Seduction, is you keep adding new things to the relationship every time to kind of simulate the excitement of building that relationship.
Yeah.
Now, if the player then decides that, oh, I don't fall in love with you, maybe she kills herself, that NPC, and then that's start something else, then maybe the next adventure is her father, the king, is furious because he caused the death of his daughter, and then it's a completely different story.
Yeah. I don't think it's something you
could start. Okay, or not.
But, you know, yes, I agree. I think that's a very good idea. I don't, however, think that it's something you could start from the very beginning. I think you'd have to see.
Go on. I know what you're saying is you got to wait and see if the players will buy into it,
exactly.
Right? But I think you could lay the elements down from the beginning.
You can definitely lay the elements down.
And then if
down.
They don't buy into it, then I think you can do something
and
else with it.
It becomes a
and
different story.
And it could
story.
Be unrequited love.
I agree.
So you could keep the love. Yeah, all right.
Y'all going the same way.
Cool.
Same
page, yeah.
Sorry, before I cut you off, Wayne, you were going to bring up a fairy tale? I cut you off about 10, 15 minutes ago.
You mean I was going to bring up, what, Rumpelstiltskin?
I think that was the fairy tale you mentioned, yes.
Okay. Yeah, I just saw that. That's another example of a fairy tale that has the deal in it. In that, obviously Rumpelstiltskin agrees to help the miller's daughter spin straw into gold in exchange for her firstborn child. Most stories, most fairy deals have some way to break them. Usually through the cleverness or sacrifice or just perseverance of the mortal involved, usually.
Or dumb luck.
Or dumb luck, sometimes.
Which is kind of Rumpelstiltskin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she did at least plan by sending people out to try and find a
good
secret.
Good use of spies.
And good reliance on Rumpelstiltskin the glow.
Yeah, right.
So, people not familiar, the deal is to guess his name.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If she can give him his name, then the deal is off.
Sorry, I was thinking about spinning straw into gold, how to put that into a more mundane thing, like maybe picking stocks or something.
See, I don't know. Maybe we're on different pages here, but I don't think you actually have to pull the exact elements from each story, so long as you pull the theme.
That's fine. You pull out whatever you want.
Exactly.
Honestly.
If you like the theme, take that. If you like the elements only, take
that. You like the character? If you want to have a deal...
If you like the whole lot.
Deal-making gnome, then have, like, Rumpelstiltskin.
Just don't name him Rumpelstiltskin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be the thing. He's like,
yeah. What's my name?
Rumpelstiltskin. God damn it!
Rumpelstiltskin. This is like the third deal we made, man.
That's right. Actually, that could be quite a funny NPC.
What about you, Chris? What fairy tales are you particularly interested in?
Well, probably one of my favorites is Little Red Riding Hood.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Is it the overt sexual nature?
No. Not, okay. In fact, not. Sorry, we looked up a few fairy tales beforehand, and it turns out Red Riding Hood is supposed to be an allegory for
sexual awakening.
That's right. Yeah,
I thought that was kind of common knowledge.
The red of the cape is
menstrual
blood. I hadn't heard of it before,
only as perverts, I guess. Huh?
I don't know. It's the story just seems really interesting to me. I mean, I like the characters in it. Yeah, and I think it's actually been something that's pretty popular recently, so there's been a lot of reimaginings of it, and I've read those, and they also seem...
Why is that? Yeah, because...
I don't know.
It seems like, yeah, sure, it's about, I guess, an allegory for sexual reawakening. That seems to be the one that people want to, like, retell and give it the mature treatment.
You know, I think it might have a lot to do with, like, kind of the Joss Whedon thing of late, with having strong central female characters.
But is she strong?
Is she in
the
original one? Is she strong? No,
not
she's
in the original.
But most of the fairy tales have a female character: Rumpelstiltskin, Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella,
and
Beauty, and the Oh, sorry, Beauty was a woman.
Beast and the...
Beauty and the Beast! And the Beast with a woman! Like, oh, man,
take two. It was called Beauty and the Beast, not Beast and the Beauty.
The Beast was a woman, too. Ooh, that goes in a new direction. I don't know. But that's...
I think the point I was going to make in most of those stories...
Well,
the,
one point
the
is, I think Josh Whedon gets too much credit. Because, you know, people are like, oh, why are there so many prominent females? Oh, Joss Whedon had something. Really?
I don't think he started by any means, but I think he's brought that wave to really big popularity with Buffy and whatnot, Firefly.
I think he rode that wave.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. But anyway, I don't want to talk about Joss Whedon.
But, actually, you know, the more I think about it, there's not really that much evidence for it, because in the original one, Little Red Riding Hood, she didn't save herself.
No, she doesn't save herself.
Hunter had to come and
save
her.
Yeah, the woodsman cut open his, and get her in the belly. Yeah.
There wasn't anything... Maybe the story didn't have anything to do with, like, true love. That she remained... I suppose she could be almost...
Tragic heroine? Or is she even a heroine?
She's not even a heroine. Yeah, exactly. I'd argue she was a kid, and therefore couldn't really
but
do
But then
anything.
Again, she isn't a heroine, but the hunter really isn't the hero. I mean, he comes to her rescue, but that's it. He gets, like, 5 minutes of the story. But regardless, in a lot of the retellings, though, it is told with that.
Maybe it's because... And to touch on another previous episode, Werepocalypse, where... Mm. The intelligent wolf. Mm-hmm. So instead of just as this monster that's trying to outsmart her, dressing up as grandma.
Yeah, and he could,
so that gives it more dimensions
absolutely.
To work
he
with.
Could easily physically overpower her, but he tries seduction first.
Yeah, I don't know why you would dress seduction. Up as a grandmother to seduce her.
Yeah, that seduction, I wasn't thinking sexually, but I just chose the wrong word, sorry.
You just trick her.
Guile, maybe.
Guile,
yeah. Right. But other ones, maybe Alice in Wonderland?
Well, that's... I would argue that it's almost not a fairy tale.
Okay.
Because it was specifically supposed to be a satire. That the characters have kind of been lost about who they were supposed to be.
Well, the Mad Hatter is actually to do with the Hatters of the time, yeah. Because they mm-hmm. use mercury,
yeah, yeah.
Which causes you to... If touching mercury causes you to go insane.
Right.
But yeah, everybody's got... You can connect it to somebody. It's got a lot of illusions in that. Mm-hmm.
I would use that for inspiration in what? Like fairy tale things would be.
Dungeon Land and...
Oh, yeah.
Dungeonland's a great module.
I'm thinking if I were to take any story and put a campaign in that story, I'd probably choose Alice in Wonderland. But that's also probably because it's a...
Vorpal Sword comes from...
there you go, yeah. Yeah.
Those tales.
I'm sure there's a Jabberwocky and a Monstrous Man.
They use the same picture, too.
Yeah, probably. There's actually... I'm not sure if it's for Savage Worlds or something, but Triple Ace Games actually has an RPG set in...
Grimm?
No. It's actually called Wonderland.
Oh, cool.
I forget if that's the exact title. It's something with Wonderland in it. And I haven't looked at it, but kind of what I said before, like, I wouldn't want to play Alice in Wonderland, because mm-hmm. if you actually have, say, like, Alice and the Cheshire Cat, and, like, if you have all the characters from the story, mm-hmm. personally, I don't like playing those kind of games, where you're playing established characters. So I think what I've seen, except as NPCs, so I think in... The AAA games RPG, you're just playing unnamed characters, or as of yet unnamed characters, in that universe.
Would you be interested in playing a Cheshire Cat?
No, because I think the world has established as only one. Yeah. Right? If you say if it's a fully fleshed out thing and kind of like...
If you're not going to be able to deviate from the world, then...
But that's what I mean. Like, don't use those kind of characters as playable races. I think you can play cards, very rare humans... Talking animals, maybe a few other things.
So instead of the Cheshire Cat, you play a talking animal.
Yeah, because there were talking animals.
But there is a Cheshire Cat in the world.
I don't know. I'm assuming there is. Oh, okay. Maybe there's an NPC.
I would think one thing that you could take from it and not use necessarily the realm or not play in the realm is NPCs and villains that don't make sense or contradict themselves, but you can't reason with them, such as the Queen and... Like, if you had an authority figure, I think that would be quite maddening if you had an authority figure like the Queen of Hearts. Mm-hmm. The Queen of Hearts, right?
The Queen of Hearts, yeah.
Yeah, where they would say something that doesn't make any sense, but if you tried to explain it to them, they would either get angry mm-hmm. or they wouldn't be able to follow your logic, which is actual true logic. Mm-hmm. But they're the authority. And if we're talking about, like in Changeling, we were saying, it doesn't really seem very strange or maddening or paranoia, but even that, mm-hmm. that could be quite frustrating. Hopefully, in a fun way.
Yeah,
that
but
be
that
very
could
fine
that
line.
Could add to like what are the rules of this world? Like last time she said this, and this time now she's saying that, which completely contradicts what she said last time. Mm-hmm. There are no rules. there's no political structure and things like that.
Yeah.
That's one thing that I actually liked when I watched the Disney cartoon, Off of the Head. And
That's one thing from Changeling that I did like is the motivations that a lot of the fairies had and just how strange they would seem to people. Like paying for a meal with a shoelace.
That was only at the Goblin Market.
As an example.
That absolutely fell flat, too. I think
I didn't like the paying with shoelaces.
That's a kind of example that, like, you're going across the Manhattan Bridge and you have to pay a troll that lives underneath it. Why? Because it's a bridge and he's a troll.
But what I was saying is then, okay, let's say we use your troll and bridge thing, is he wants this for, last time he wanted like a gold piece.
Yeah.
And this time he wants a song. Yeah. Or he keeps changing what it is, or he lets you buy free, and you're like, well, yesterday you let me buy, and there was no, well, there's a toll. There's always been a toll.
Mm-hmm.
No, yesterday there was no toll. And kind of like that scenario.
Yeah.
Or if you try to pay for a shoelace at this cafe the next time, they're like, why are you paying with a shoelace? That's $5.
Yeah.
So you never know the rules. You're always like, well, what are we supposed to do here? Mm-hmm. I don't know how, I mean, like, if it's too much, it could be frustrating, because then the players just don't know what.
Either that, or I could see the players giving up.
Yeah, or they could give up.
They try and just kill the troll.
Or not even that.
Oh, come on, they're players. That's what they would do.
Well, yeah, they're players.
The
that's what
first
they do.
Time.
You just have to make the troll really badass. But I was just thinking, eventually...
I still got my shotgun? Yeah, all right.
Well, I'm going to cross the bridge, yeah.
Ka-chung.
But yeah, I could see...
Do you take 12 gauge or 20?
I could see the players getting angry rather than the characters. Yeah.
But Chris, you said you liked Snow White.
Oh, yeah.
That was
one
of your favorites?
Snow White. That one is pretty cool as well. I don't know. That's the one that, if I'm doing reimagining for dark fairy tales specifically, that one's one of the ones that I think could be darkest.
Because of the glass coffin?
Part of that. Actually,
that'd be pretty cool to stumble upon a glass coffin, and what do you do with that?
I was thinking about it the other day, and I actually thought vampire for that. The World of Darkness vampire. Thinking about, like, make it...
She's white?
Well, that's part of it.
That glass coffin ain't going to offer much protection when the sun comes up, though.
Well, that wasn't part of it. You mentioned that there was some woman who was collecting children. I just thought that kind of system, like, to have this myth that's being carried into the modern world, but it's been caused by a real woman who did exist, and maybe she was kidnapping children ages ago. Just kind of fitting that into a vampire setting. I think would be pretty interesting.
So you're saying that the vampires in modern time, they actually started all these fairy tales. So like Bluebeard, he's still around. He's a vampire. Yeah. And Snow White is, well, she's kind of has a tragic story, the real Snow White.
Yeah, I think you're mixing up those two historical things.
Bluebeard came from
I understand I made a mistake.
Yeah.
In that. But regardless, like, she's in a coffin, maybe she stole children. She went to Turbor, and that's what the
And she likes
came
to keep
from.
Seven of them.
Yeah. I think if you...
Why seven? Why not?
I think... Well, actually, that kind of touches on the vampire thing.
Yeah. I was going to say that touches on like the madness thing a little bit.
But I think that'd be really cool if you started off as just a regular vampire campaign. And
I've
then...
always had six children. You had seven. No, six. I've always had five children. But you had...
Yeah, I was going to say, one of the things that in the Changeling setting is the fairies, like the enemy, supposedly, whatever they were, that's essentially what they were, right? Like, they could change forms and change personas, but it's almost as if their past personas never existed, which ties into the madness thing. So, for example, like a troll might be a troll for 100 years, and then for another 100 years, it becomes a fairy princess. But it doesn't ever remember being the troll. To it, it is and only ever was the fairy princess, even though it's the same entity. So essentially, for them... Nothing existed other than the rules it created. Hence the, I've always had five children. What are you talking about? I've only ever had four children. And they act to them, they actually did.
Okay, I can see where you're going with that. Yeah,
thanks for tossing that bone.
it took me a while to get how that related to what we're talking about. But I got it.
It kind of ties into the madness thing, right?
Yeah.
To a third party, the rules always change. But to the individual making the rules... No, those rules have and always were that way.
I don't know if madness would be an element that I would specifically go with. I like the lack of any logic, but madness is maybe... I'm saying that
isn't that madness, though? A lack of logic would be kind of madness?
Except that...
Madness can be your own kind of logic.
Things make sense to you.
I mean, maybe I'm just dicing terms again, huh?
We do like splitting hairs.
Yeah. It's becoming a episode staple.
5 minutes of news to start with, a little bit on games, some semantics arguing for half an hour.
Oh, armed with a different dictionary. Well, Oxford says this, so I'm going to stick with that. So, yeah, so maybe she's like a vampire?
That's what I was thinking is to start it off as a regular vampire campaign, the players have no knowledge of this, but make her the villain, and maybe by the end of it somehow reveal that, in fact, she is Snow White from the tales. That's what I was thinking anyway.
That sounds neat, yeah. Especially what you would do with the dwarves.
Yeah. Oh, man, that could be really creepy.
That's what I said, like, to me, that,
oh, exactly.
That idea came to me, and man, that's point. A really dark...
We weren't dwarves to begin with.
That's what I was thinking.
I wasn't thinking that.
I was thinking that.
Cool.
What, you know, the Cinderella, it seems kind of odd, but the of course, the glass slipper, that's kind of an interesting element. Or if you look at the old Greek myth.
The sandal.
The sandal.
How is anyone going to fit this sandal?
How is anyone not going to fit this sandal? Yeah. It's a sandal, man.
Your Majesty, we have 3,000 suitors for you.
Yeah. Some of them men. Anyway, where are you going with the glass slipper, Lyle?
To be honest, I was hoping somebody else would grab or seize that, because it's quite intriguing. It seems like an intriguing element, yeah, but I'm not sure necessarily what I would do with it. I mean, it's probably been done in a lot of legends, like even like the sword and the stone, King Arthur. Mm-hmm. It's like only one person. It's only this item fits only one person, and that's the chosen one.
Yeah.
So I guess it's just basically the chosen one element. But then there could be the mistaken chosen one, like this glass slipper, whatever it's recast as, fits somebody who's actually quite villainous.
Well, it's tying into that, like in the Cinderella story, in one version, doesn't the stepsister actually cut off her own toes so that her foot fits the slipper? Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I've heard that.
I would believe it. You know, I've heard her breaking her.
Yeah, he cut off her toes, breaking her foot so that she fits in the slipper.
Yeah.
And for a while, the king thinks that she is the one, obviously, who, you know, he's kind of destined to marry.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, finds out, you know, she wasn't, and she gets her gruesome fairy tale comeuppance, but.
Or you could have somebody, like an illusion, even, if you wanted to make it more
fantastic,
is that they're using an illusion to fit whatever meant to fit. Like, even like if you had the sword and the sword's actually still in the stone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what they've done is they've cast this glamour that looks like they have the sword, so then they become the king or the queen, and everybody's following them, and you as the characters have to try to convince them that, no. And it's almost like the Emperor's New Clothes. It's like, no, he does... doesn't really have the sword, or he doesn't really have that, and he's not really the king, so you have to kind of try to prove, either try to break the glamour, or in a more mundane way, try to get the evidence that that person doesn't actually fit.
That's interesting, like the evidence. You could make I think it'd be a fun sandbox camp, but it started off with, that's the group of characters, they have to find the person who fits this slipper, and it's what, like a size 8 slipper, and you're in New York, there's 10,000 people who fit this slipper, how do you find the right one? Good start to a campaign.
You're shoe salespeople.
I don't know. That's something that maybe it's a bad idea. I don't know.
That could almost be like...
I think you wouldn't use a slipper. You would use something else that could narrow down the field.
I was going to say, I almost wouldn't see that being the main campaign. I would see that being the almost like a connecting thread to... I forget the term.
It was just something I came up with right now.
A wagon train style story.
Right.
Because you're constantly, maybe that's the wrong term, you're constantly looking for this person who fits this item.
Or who this item belongs to.
But yeah, you're kind of, as you search for these people, you're getting caught up
inside tracks, right? It's like the arcing premise of this adventure. Like,
well, we've defeated the big bad wolf, but we still got to find that slipper.
Because if done the other way, I would say the storyteller or the GM would actually have to have a very definite idea of who this item belongs to so that they could feed the players clues. If they don't have a clear idea of who this belongs to, then the players are just going to flounder because the storyteller isn't going to be able to point them in the right direction.
Well, that's hard to say. If you start a mystery with no answer to it, that could be very frustrating in any campaign.
That's why I think a mystery couldn't be a sandbox, really. We'll perhaps go into a future episode.
Yeah, I think it will. Yeah. Well, because I disagree.
But. Okay.
Cool.
All right. So join us for next episode next week.
All right. See you then. Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.